Blair. Mr. Finley, good morning to you, but let's give everybody a second to get in and out of the courtroom. And you may proceed.
May it please the court. Your Honors, my name is Bo Finley. I represent the appellant in this matter, Kenneth Blair. In September of 2015, Mr. Blair was charged with three different things in Douglas County District Court. Possession of a firearm by a felon, possession of a stolen firearm, and possession of narcotics with the intent to distribute, namely cocaine. A bench trial was held in this matter in February of 2017. Mr. Blair was adjudicated guilty on the count of being a felon in possession of a firearm. Sentencing occurred in April of 2017. An appeal was promulgated, and there's two primary issues. One, during the litigation, a motion to reveal confidential informant was filed on behalf of Mr. Blair, and that was denied by the district court. We contend that that was error. The second was that chain of custody was objected to throughout the bench trial, and most importantly, it came from two different positions, but nonetheless, the judge, Bowie, received the firearm in question despite the objections to chain of custody and foundation. Now, to flesh out these issues, I got to go back in time a little bit to 2014. An officer by the name of Lisa Bilwak is a principal in this matter, is certainly a player in this matter. She had been working with a confidential informant through the duration of that year, and by the accounts from the trial record, it was fruitful. It produced felony and misdemeanor warrants. Fast forward to 2015, Detective Bilwak's attention was drawn to Mr. Blair. The confidential informant developed some information that Mr. Blair had been participating in narcotics distribution and that he may have possessed a firearm in his bedroom. I think the term that she used was a long gun, or he used was a long gun. Now, a motion to reveal confidential informant was filed after the information was filed with the district court. And what essentially happened was, at the time that that hearing was to take place in June of 2016, the state dismissed on the PWID, on the possession with intent to deliver charge. The thinking was, presumptively from the state, and the judge latched onto it, was that if you dismiss on the possession with intent to deliver case, the substance of what the confidential informant is saying is essentially negated, and therefore you don't have to reveal the confidential informant. We have problems with that from twofold positions. First, it just simply ignores the fact that the confidential informant provided information regarding a firearm. They specifically provided information that was consistent with the allegations. As you recall, the allegations in this is that a firearm was found...
Not completely consistent, was it?
Not completely, but consistent. You know, and Chief Justice Heffigan, I know where you're going. At least I think I do. There was a description of a long gun.
Mm-hmm.
To be perfectly honest, I'm not even sure exactly what they were referring to. Was it? Are we talking about a rifle? Are we talking about a handgun with an extended barrel? I do not know. It was simply described, quote, as a long gun. But I think we can both agree that it was a firearm that was being described. I think that we can all agree that the description provided by the CI was that long gun or firearm was found in, or was reported to be in the defendant's bedroom. Indeed, it was actually found in the defendant's bedroom.
The defendant's pillow.
Under the defendant's pillow. That's correct, Your Honor. That's correct. So that is consistent with what exactly the CI was talking about, but for perhaps some discrepancy as to the description of the weapon. What my problem is again twofold. I've articulated the first part. The second part of this is the process that Judge Bowie utilized in order to do this. 27.510 talks about a very clear procedure in order to determine whether a revelation of confidential informant ought to be had. You start with basically like a prima facie finding. Is there a fair determination that this individual's information would have bearing on guilt or innocence at trial? In this case, I submit to you that it does. When you get there, you question whether or not the state is invoking the privilege to not reveal. That doesn't come through an objection to the motion, but the court found that the state's attorney had indicated, I don't want to reveal, and that's good enough. So be it. That's not my primary concern. I don't like the form of the invocation, but that's neither here nor there. The most important thing, though, is the third step. It is the in-camera determination by the district court judge to make a final decision whether there is a reasonable probability that the evidence that the CI purportedly has can have bearing on guilt or innocence at trial. And in this matter, that wasn't done. We have a prima facie finding. I submit to you that it's very clear. We have an invocation by the state's attorney that privilege is going to be utilized. We need to have an in-camera hearing to make a full determination of what that CI knows and whether it would have bearing at trial. That was not done, and that's procedurally problematic.
Do we have a prima facie finding? I mean, did Judge Bowie make a prima facie finding? He seemed to conclude otherwise. Would you agree with that?
Your Honor, I don't think that Judge Bowie made a very clear finding at all. But what I would say to you is that based upon the record itself, it's plain, it's clear that there is prima facie evidence to suggest that CI had knowledge of a firearm being present in there. I don't recollect from Judge Bowie's finding that he made a direct determination that there is no prima facie evidence. I think what he did is simply follow the state's strategic path and say, well, if you're dismissing on the possession with intent to deliver charge, then it's off the table. And we didn't think anything more about it. Any other testing procedure.
How could the confidential informant have been useful to you as a witness?
A number of ways, Judge. If we know his identity, we can ascertain, I'm getting ahead of myself. We would depose him. We would ascertain potential prejudices. We would ascertain different people that were there that could testify. We could develop exculpatory witnesses that way. There's a number of things that could be utilized to be helpful under those circumstances. We wouldn't have asked otherwise. My prerogative.
But in the remaining charge, the issue is, did your client have the gun on the day that the search warrant was served?
Yes, sir. I'm just want to make sure I understand your question. I do.
How does the confidential informant help you about that day at that time?
Like I said, I am speculating at this point. My speculation is that if we could have had the opportunity to develop exculpatory mitigating evidence, it's conceivable we could put other people in that house. If we know, obviously this confidential informant was present almost contemporaneously, if not contemporaneously, with the act alleged, we have some ideas as to other people that may have been present. Perhaps there was bias on the part of the CI. There's a number of exculpatory avenues that we could develop. I'm not saying that I would absolutely have developed it. I can't say that because we never got the opportunity. But had I known his identity, had Mr. Kaler known his identity, we may have been in a position to develop mitigating, more importantly, exculpatory evidence. But we never had that chance. We never got to depose this confidential informant. And so we never were able to look at this issue with any depth.
And when you say exculpatory evidence, like somebody else had the gun,
that's the most obvious defense under these circumstances. Yes, but again, I feel like I start to speculate a little too much. I just wanted, and more importantly, trial counsel, just wanted the opportunity to see if they could flesh that evidence out, and we just were not given that opportunity.
So is this a correct statement of the record that on August 16th or before, because August 16th is the date the warrant was issued, a confidential informant has said the defendant has or may have a long gun, and on August 22, a handgun was found?
Yes, Your Honor, that's a correct statement. It was an awkward time, Judge. I didn't know what to do with that.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Klein, good morning to you.
Good morning. May it please the Court, Mr. Chief Justice, I'm Kimberly Klein, Assistant Attorney General, representing the state in this matter. Your Honor, we think the District Court properly denied the motion to reveal the identity of the confidential informant because of the statutory standard. 27.510 says that...
Did the judge follow the procedure he was supposed to follow?
Well, no, and that's not entirely his fault because the state kind of shortcut the proceeding by saying, we're going to dismiss the drug charges. Those are the charges upon which the confidential informant actually had information to give. Once the state dismissed those charges, then there essentially wasn't anything left for the court to have an in-camera hearing on because of the remaining charges that were pending against Blair.
Well, isn't the in-camera hearing supposed to be about why the informant might be able to be a witness for the defendant?
Yeah, and that's why I think...
Isn't that missing?
Yes, but not under these circumstances, because the charges that remained against Blair were being felon in possession of a firearm and possession of a stolen firearm.
So is this the equivalent of harmless error?
I don't think it's error at all. I think that because of the nature of the charges, the confidential informant is not in a position to say that Blair is a felon. That's going to have to be proved by either stipulation, which is typically frequently done, or by documentary evidence. And he's not in possession and in position to say that the handgun is stolen. That's going to have to be, again, kind of a documentary trail, generally, is how that's done. And the informant simply has nothing of any value to give on the charges that remain. And the statutory standard is whether or not the CI has, or may be in a position to give testimony to necessary to a fair determination of the issue of guilt or innocence in a criminal case.
So opposing counsel is saying the CI might have something to say about, I'll just say, firearms in general.
That isn't really necessarily relevant to the issue of guilt or innocence when you look at the nature of the charges.
Guilt or innocence of possession of the handgun.
Possession of
handgun?
I don't know what he would be able to say about possession of the handgun. It isn't ownership, it's possession of it. He was in the room in which it was found under his pillow. Hard to say that somebody else was in possession of it at the time the search warrant was executed. Somebody else may actually own the thing, but that's not what the problem of the offense is.
I guess I was going to the same question as to opposing counsel. Is what the CI knew on August 16th or earlier, right, would be relevant to the guilt or innocence of what was found on which the charges are based on August 22nd?
Yeah, and what the confidential informant said was that Blair, and I emphasize the word may, he may have what he described as a long gun. Typically, that's a rifle or a shotgun. No long gun was found, but a stolen handgun was found under Blair's pillow in the room in which Blair was located when the search warrant was executed. So the confidential informant would frankly have nothing of any value to offer on either of the charges that were that remained against Blair once the state dismissed the drug charges in this particular case. Your Honors, unless you have other questions about this or the chain of custody issue, we would ask that the judgment of the district court...
What is the state's position on chain of custody? Was this raised below, and if so, what be with respect to the firearm.
He did object on excuse me, to the chain of custody, and while I don't think anyone would argue that it wasn't kind of sloppy handling, I think the chain of custody, as you look at the totality of the evidence, was adequately proved. One officer, Brown, I believe it was, actually discovered the weapon, but he said, I did not seize it because per departmental policy, that's not what I'm supposed to do. So I summoned the crime lab personnel, and Vandenacker, one of the crime lab people, appeared and basically took photos as she peeled back the pillows and the sheets and all of that to uncover the handgun under the pillow. And Vandenacker is essentially the only person from that point on who had anything to do with it. She seized it, she bagged it, she tagged it, she transported it to the crime lab, checked it into the locker to which she has the sole key, retrieved it, ran the fingerprint and DNA testing on it, and then put it back in the locker. Not only was the firearm, once it was discovered, completely and solely in the hands of law enforcement, it was completely and solely in the hands of one particular individual, Vandenacker, once it had been seized. It is not listed on return in inventory, which nobody could really explain. Apparently, everybody thought somebody else had done it, and it just simply never showed up. But because of the nature of firearms, it's readily ascertainable if firearm X is the same one that was seized by make, model, caliber, and most importantly, serial number. And they went through and they said, yes, this is the same gun that I saw at the scene, that I seized at the scene, that I checked into the evidence locker, and that we have here before.
So is chain of custody a relevant consideration with a discrete item that can be identified in those manners that you suggest are such a serial number?
I think it's always a relevant thing, but I think it becomes, when you have a readily identifiable object, such as a gun with a particular serial number on it, it essentially becomes, I suppose, less of an issue if you can identify it by, say, the serial number, and you can say that, yes, this is, in fact, the same gun, and it's in the same condition as it was when I last shot or when I seized it or whatever. Unless there are other questions, we would ask, again, that the judgment of the district court be affirmed.
Thank you very much. Is there time for rebuttal? No time for rebuttal. We will go on to the